If they want to complain, and there's a process we've created. If, for example, if you did get funding from the federal government for any language programs, and there's some kind of a dispute, that we are kind of like unlike the ombudsman for the for between the indigenous group and the government. And we also are supportive of innovative projects that are going to help in new ways of teaching or learning a language. The purpose of our office is to make sure that we are creating more people to speak their languages.
That's so good to hear, and thank you for sharing that information. They're amazing reminders, and that's what we need to keep pushing forward with, to stay united as Inuit Ila.
That was Robbie Watt. Robbie is a director of the Commission of Indigenous Languages in Ottawa. Ani nagaluang matayla o kausia pibut pikusia pibullo o pinaganiat so uta o sapeng nakto hang ilagulu hanulima amalusuna lima akia bihak suting na kumig ikaiti daw wakata hanutigi inui at so sungun ni mangata o kausivu ilikusivulu pichu tigit sugin na kumig Robbie. If you want to learn some Inuktitut or any of the other indigenous languages featured here on Words and Culture, please visit our website at wordsandculture.ca. You can click on the resources tab to check out some of our vocabulary builders. Sometimes English words just twist my tongue. Vocabulary. Now to twist your tongue. Here are some words in Inuktitut that I'm going to leave you with to practice with. So in Inuktitut, when we greet each other, specifically mostly in Nunavik, when we say hello, we say ai. Ai. You say ai with a ah at the end of the word. Ai. Ai. However, because Inuit are living all across the circumpolar Arctic and our dialects are different, in the Qikiqtaaluk region, this would be in, if you look on the map, on Baffin Island, they say Asuyutin, 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 Asuyutin. That translates to, well, here you are. I love our language. I'm Madeline Alakarellak. Ale anak to khalang maleu khaus tinik pitu ti khare amik inuge amilu pigu suppunga. I am very proud to be Inuk, and I am very proud to be able to share with you my interviews relating to our Inuktitut language. Until next time, inukatikai atsunai.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin. Soko seni denit e. Ninen yuji hina.
Ekose.
Kakuhutau. We'll see you again.
Radio's best friend. Loyal, attentive, responsive, cute, and cuddly. Or maybe you're more ready to roughhouse. Regardless, you're always happy at our home on the dial, willing to catch frisbees on radio content we toss in your direction. Hi, I'm Kira. This week, we're asking you to throw us a donation in dollar form. Donate now at cjsffunddrive.ca or text DONATE to 778-782-2573. And be radio's best friend.
Yes, welcome back to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University. You just heard Words and Culture, episode 4 of series 5. So thanks to Words and Culture for that. And we are also here during Fun Drive. It is the one time a year where we ask you, dear listener, to chip in with a donation at cjsffundrive.ca. I am joined now in studio by Danny. Hello.
Hi, how's it going?
I am quite well. I'm always excited about Fun Drive, even though it is the time of year where we have to ask something of our listeners. It's fun to get into that dialogue and conversation. You used to be a regular programmer here at CJSF. Did you do a Fun Drive
while you were here? Yes, I was a programmer for 5 years. So yeah, I did about 5 Fun Drives. And yeah, each year I think it got a little easier, because early on, you know, there is a bit of that trepidation, that anxiety around asking people about things like this. But at the same time, you know, knowing just the amount of dedication and passion and love that comes from every single person I've met at this station has really inspired me. And I think that hopefully those listening right now feel the same way, and they would like to give a bit of a donation. So yeah, if you go to cjsffundtribe.ca, you can go donate. You can also call or text 778-782-2573. That's 778-782-2573. And you can text or call donate, and also donate through that. You'll get the link to our donation page if you decide to text. And yeah, it goes a long way in supporting the station and ensuring that we can continue growing and providing the coverage and the perspectives that you won't get anywhere else other than CJSF.
Yeah, and I mentioned you were a former programmer.
Yes.
You're back with the station now as a full-time civic journalist. And so that is a grant-funded position, right? That's not necessarily directly Fun Drive related, but it's grant-funded because we can't afford to employ a full-time journalist,
yes.
Right? And so that's one of the reasons that we do this Fun Drive, is so that we can expand our capacity and so that we can continue to support positions like yours, because while we're receiving funding to pay you to do the work, the station still has to do other things to support that, and that just comes out of our regular day-to-day hours and all of that. So one of the ways that you, dear listener, can continue to hear great work by Danny and others, potentially.
Yourself as well.
Myself. But even other people at the station who are not lucky enough to receive grant funding, the way you can keep that going and build our capacity is by being radio's best friend and donating to CJSF's Fun Drive. And as Danny said, you can go to cjsffundrive.ca or just send us a text, 778-782-2573. And now we're going to hear a little bit of the work that Danny has been doing. You said this has an intro built in, but is there anything else you want to say about it?
Yeah, just that I was really excited to do this interview. It's with Steve Robinson, one of the organizers for the Ridge Meadows Farmers Institute. And I won't say much else because I explained it within the piece itself, but it's a really cool listen. So thank you for tuning in.
CJSFFundrive.ca to make a donation now. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. This is Danny, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. And on October 28th, 2024, CJSF was able to have a brief conversation with Steve Robinson, one of the founding organizers for the Ridge Meadows Farmers Institute. The Ridge Meadows Farmers Institute is a collective of farming families from both Pitt Meadows and Maple Ridge that hope to combine their efforts to combat certain issues within the agricultural industry, including climate change. During the discussion, Steve and I spoke of the history of farming advocacy within the region that led to the creation of the Institute, as well as the specific issues that the Institute hopes to address in the coming months. Please take a listen. So hi, everyone. This is Danny, your community journalist for CJSF Burnaby, and I'm here with Steve Robinson, one of the founding organizers of the Ridge Meadows Farmers Institute. How are you doing today?
Great.
Now, I wanted to do this interview because, you know, when I saw the Ridge Meadows Farmers Institute and I saw the work that was being done, I think just the idea of people, specifically farmers, that do such a necessary job and have such an integral role in not just our daily lives, but the agricultural industry, coming together as one sort of united community or voice to address so many of these issues in the industry. I think that's something that people should really know about. So that's why I wanted to reach out to you.
Well, great. Thanks for inviting me on today.
Of course. Now, the first thing I want to ask is for people that don't know about the Institute yet, if you could just give a brief background of the Ridge Meadows Farmers Institute for...
I'm going to have to go way back in time, Bill, because actually the Pitt Meadows Farmers Institute was actually formed in 1930, and it was basically disbanded about 20 years ago. And it was actually formed in 1930 to appeal to the province and to the federal government to ensure that CP Rail would create basically a railway siding on Harris Road in Pitt Meadows for the farming community here to have access to grain coming from the prairies. Because in 1930, there was nowhere near adequate road systems or adequate trucking to actually do that. And so we actually, the farmers in Pitt Meadows, actually had a co-op building in that location actually until last year. And as part of this renewal of the port system, the city of Pitt Meadows and the federal government and CP Rail, actually, I think it's Vancouver Ports, were going to install an underpass at Harris Road, and the co-op needed to be moved. So the lease was canceled, and the city did its best, the city of Pitt Meadows did its best to find a new location for the consumers co-op, which was operating out of that leased space until last year. They did their best to find a new spot, and we couldn't come to terms with the Agricultural Land Commission on a new location. So that kind of started a number of farmers in our community realizing that we needed to reinstate, if you want to call it, our voice in the system. And that, as well as the droughts last year, caused us to realize that there were some very critical tasks that need to be addressed and needed to be relayed to various levels of government. So we decided that we would start a new Farmers Institute, and we would call it Ridge Meadows and include the city of Maple Ridge, because they have never had a Farmers Institute there.
Thank you very much for that response. I think you kind of covered a lot of the boxes when it comes to the history of farming advocacy within Pitt Meadows and Maple Ridge, and I guess where things are today. I think one thing I saw when it came to the coverage of this institute and the formation is that climate change is a big part of the advocacy work that you plan on doing.
And I think, you know, unfortunately, I think the majority of the members in the farming community here, and I think in other places, even in BC, the farming community has been very late to the table, you know, recognizing that climate change actually was real, mm-hmm. and that we are seeing significant effects of that. And my own personal experience is my family has farmed blueberries in this location of Pitt Meadows for nearly 40 years. And there were many summers where we would pick blueberries and it would rain every day. And then we would get about five nice days before the peony and it would start to rain again. And yet for the last 5 years, for sure, you know, we've had significant drying trends develop that have been stressful, if you want to call it that, on established plantings. And of course, we've had a couple of major rain events. So it's the weather patterns have become significantly more extreme than we've been used to in the past. As a matter of fact, the water level, I've been living in this house in Pitt Meadows for 34 years, and the water levels came up higher near my house than they've ever been in that 34 years last Saturday.
Yeah.
So that shows you just don't prep against.
Exactly, yeah. Because you mentioned the drying, but also it's just the extremity, right, on both ends of the climate spectrum in that case.
But the good part about this, and this is what we're trying to express as the Farmers Institute, is that we still believe that this area is a fantastic growing area, primarily because of the temperatures are so mild through such a major part of the year. And we know that some of the large greenhouse operations in Delta started buying land in Texas and California and Arizona as much as 20 years ago, and they have faced such high cost to cool those greenhouses now, even though they had left here to avoid the high cost of heating, that now they put a moratorium on purchasing greenhouse lands in the southern states and have come back to BC now.
Oh, wow.
Because they see that temperate climate is being very, very beneficial to growing crops.
Mm-hmm. And I believe it was just last month that you had one of your first community meetings for the Institute. How would you say the community response has been to...
The farmers have responded very, very well to it. And we're actually... you could ask Sarah the exact date. I can't remember the exact date. We're actually having our inaugural meeting coming up in the next 2 weeks, where we intend to vote in the board of directors, etc. We've had a couple of meetings over the last year, and I've got great response from the community wanting to be involved.
What are some of the concerns that some of the other farmers involved with the institution, I guess, have been talking about?
The majority of the concerns are around what I call major issues, how we deal with the cities that we live in here, having a single voice to be able to speak to issues to local and provincial government. But the issues primarily, well, in Tin Meadows especially, the issues of both water source as well as water drainage are very, very high on the tops of people's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the association thinks together that a lot of these things are relatively easy to solve as long as we actually put our heads together and produce solutions for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess, would you say, as much as, you know, this institute is a way to have a sort of centralized, united voice for these issues, do you see it also as sort of creating community among farmers that may not have had that beforehand?
Yes, when we had our first meeting a year ago, one of the major concerns that many of the farming families expressed was the fact that they really felt that there was that the community and farming families did not see a future here. So we realized that actually establishing, and in your term, like a small community of farming families, you could then have platforms upon which you'd actually celebrate the fact that we are here, that we're growing food, and then actually excite the next generation and be involved in that challenge.
Yeah, the excitement factor, I think, is something that's important when doing advocacy work such as this. I guess one of the last things I want to ask you is, when it comes to, you know, the progression of the Ridge Meadows Farmers Institute, where do you hope to see the Institute grow within the next year in terms of these issues?
Well, we would hope that that eventually we would end up with maybe as many as 100 families that would be involved in the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And we would expect that by having that kind of number of interested people, that we'd be able to influence a government policy, we'd be able to influence local decisions around land use. We'd be able to concentrate on the fact that we see ourselves as being one of the first responders, if you want to call it that, as it relates to dealing with all the environmental issues around us, because we realize that, you know, those are significant contributors to the problem. And we also feel that there is so much opportunity currently available in what I call these high numbers population centers for selling food products, that we just feel that we need to move away possibly from some of the industrialized farming commodities and go to more balanced growing, so that we could offer foodstuffs to the whole community.
So sort of increasing accessibility for community members for this farm food.
Absolutely. Creating accessibility to fresh food.
Fresh, healthy foods.
Vegetables. And even proteins as well. But the reality is that, our proximity to so many people is such a huge advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. These are not small areas, right? There are a lot of people that benefit from the formation of this institute.
Right.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. This is going to be aired on the Speak Up segment at CJSF. And I think it's a really good opportunity to get the word out there about the institute.
Great. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Danny. Good talking to you.
Yeah, you too. Bye. Once again, that was our conversation with Steve Robinson, organizer for the Ridge Meadows Farmers Institute. Thank you so much for listening to this segment. And once again, this would not be possible without the support from the Local Journalism Initiative.
Who's a good listener? Who's a good listener? That's right, you are. Who listens to their favorite programs? Who discovers new music and ideas on the regular? Yeah, you do. That's right. You're a great listener. Yes, you are. Who's there with us through thick and thin? Who donates to CJSF's fund drive? Who's our very best friend? That's right. It's you. It's you, listener. You're radio's best friend. I'm Charlotte Sister C. Farrell, host of the Suluau Show, where my guest and I speak up so you can listen up and act upon what you've heard. Donate to CJSF's Fund Drive now at cjsffunddrive.ca or text the word donate to 778-782-2573 and support local independent radio. Yay!
Yay! Thanks, Sister C. You can catch her program on Friday, where I will be co-hosting and helping her do her Fund Drive show. That's right. Like she said, it's Fund Drive. Like I just said, it's Fund Drive. You can support your very favorite local campus community radio station by texting the word donate to 778-782-2573. During business hours, 10 to 5, you can give the studio phone a call at the same number, 778-782-2573, and make a pledge to donate. Or you can head to cjsffunddrive.ca. Check out our cool Fund Drive website, see a whole bunch of more reasons why to support us, and make your donation right there online with a credit card. We appreciate it. I appreciate it. We're trying to raise $10,000 for campus community radio here in Burnaby. And taking us out through the rest of the show is going to be brand new music from Devours. This is called Sword Swallower, Zendaya's Fortress. Thank you. CJSFFunddrive.ca.
Thank you. friends support one another. And you can be radio's best friend by becoming a CJSF supporter and making a donation now at cjsffunddrive.ca or by texting DONATE to 778-782-2573. Be radio's best friend today. So